Daniels from Majority Rights, and I have the pleasure to introduce two of my favorite, but also two of the most important exponents in the struggle for European sovereignty, the terrible Tommy Metzger, who brings to us a wealth of experiential and practical knowledge in that struggle, and our own GW, one of the most articulate of its descriptive terms, who will be the chief conversant with TT. I'm going to forefront a few matters that I invited Metzger to address in this conversation, and perhaps come back to them if a reminder is needed for these matters to be addressed. Then I'll mostly stand aside and let GW and Metzger do the talking. GW has some questions of his own, and I think that the audience would like to hear them talk. The first matter I'd like to address, the right and how it's screwing up, how we might be better off talking more of white leftist perspectives. I have some thoughts on that, which I might introduce later. But specifically, I see Duke's shrill denunciation of racism, castigation of Israel's prohibition of interracial marriage, as running contrary to the rule structures that we need to normalize in order to achieve separatism. We need the definition of racism as classification of peoples in order to negotiate our human systemic ecology and its accountability of the lifespan and in evolution, particularly to keep elites from betraying us and their following masses from scabbing us. People may be free to breed outside the race, but our nations ought to have the prerogative to prohibit them from sharing our resources. We also need our people to elevate their activist manifestation. Examples of Joseph Paul Franklin, Craig Cobb, and Fraser Glenn Miller illustrate such need for elevation. We need something more on the order of Putin's arrest of Khodorkovsky, more attention to centers of power like the Federal Reserve, AIPAC, the Council of Foreign Relations. Next, some particular susceptibilities of the right, beholdenness to Hitler verbatim. I have the hypothesis that a lot of our people in the so-called white nationalist struggle seem to be led that way of Dr. William Pierce, and then there's the matter of Christianity, which I believe has had its hog tied to obsequious liberalism. Finally, I would like to hear how TT might propose synchronizing above-ground activism and coordination with underground activities. Expanding upon the nation as skin idea, I propose the idea of a DNA nation to coordinate accountability to our ancient countries, our new and deliberate communities, and its larger scope for matters of grand economic enterprise such as space exploration and defense. And with that, I would like to introduce Terrible Tommy Metzger and GW in this conversation.
Okay, thank you very much, Daniel. That's a good introduction. What we'll do now is, I think, to try to get into this in quite a pleasant and logical way, is to ask Tommy a very straightforward question, which always occurs to me to ask people, but I very rarely do. Tommy, you've had a very long and, or first of all, hello, Tommy, and it's a privilege to talk to you. You've had a very long and active life in this movement. If people think of this movement at all, they will put you right there at the top in terms of the people who've devoted their time, sacrificed themselves to it in many ways. And you know, when you look at a life like that, one of the first questions that occurs, or certainly always occurs to me, is how did this guy come to figure it all out so long ago, when so many of us were still, and this certainly includes me, were still enthralled to the general patterns of thinking, the usual ways of thinking about race and about politics. How is it that you, at a very early age, really, came upon racialist analysis, and a fairly complete analysis, I think, and managed to build on that and produce a life of activism? Where did it all begin? Hello, Tom. All is quiet.
It's been an evolution.
Do you hear me? I hear you.
Well, it's been an evolution process, starting at the bottom with the political activity. I started out as a Republican conservative and worked for a number of years at that. And then I went into the John Birch Society after I had worked for Goldwater in '64. And then I exhausted what I could get out of the John Birch Society, 9 years in the John Birch Society, until they told me what to think, and I told them nobody tells me what to think. They told me there's certain books that you shouldn't read and you shouldn't have any of your members, and if your members read these books, you have to get rid of them. And I said, I've already read all those books. And then in the Vietnam War, halfway through the war, I refused to pay my income taxes to support the Vietnam War. And in a way, joined the left in that sense. And so the IRS seized my house, and I fought with them and got it back. And then I got into the back thing spread around the country in the early 70s. And then I got involved with the Christian Identity Group, and I was with those people a while, and then in 19...
So would you say that you were, during all of this journey, you were actually looking for something that you could apply yourself to, or were you attempting to still define what it was you were really interested in?
Well, I was defining the logic and illogic of everything I was confronted with. Yeah. It's like a pyramid. You climb up a step, and some people follow with you and go on up. Some people stick right where they're at. I just kept climbing different steps and learning different things and meeting everything together and coming to a conclusion of what's logical and what's illogical, sort of like Dr. Spock on the TV, in the movies, you know.
Yeah.
Most stuff computed partially, but it didn't compute all the way. And that led me into, after 1980, I had a time worked with David Duke, and then I ran my own Klan group up until 1980, and when I ran for U.S. Congress in the 43rd Congressional District. And then I quit religion altogether, became an atheist, and a white atheist. And up until, let's say, it was about 20 years ago, I refuted the right wing, but no one seems to understand that. They want me to be in the right wing. I want to do with the right wing, whether it's racial or not. I refute more to the left, so that's the route I've been going for quite some time.
Right. When you say right and left, of course, there is a difference across the pond between what these things really mean. And Americans speak of liberal in a sense that certainly the British do not. In fact, I don't think Europeans do either, generally. And I think they need a little bit of defining. By the left, I guess it's fairly easy to get to. You would be talking about the interests of the American working man, white man.
Right. We should deal in issues, not right and left so much. But I'm so disappointed by the right racial struggle that I just want nothing to do with it, because no matter what you tell them, no matter how you advise them, they still go out and screw it up. I promote the white working class. I have no inroads into the ruling class, the wealthy classes. And I'm not interested in the Untermenschen either, what Marx considered below the working class. So that's basically what I do. And then I pick and choose like a smorgasbord. I've become quite radical on the ecology scene. I'm working always exposing what the oil companies are doing to our ecology, and I have turned anti, of course, capitalist. I took on third position back about 20 years ago, and still can position, not communist, not capitalist, but in between. So many of the issues the left have, I agree with. Of course, they're so totally wrong on the race issue.
Yeah, sure. I'm certainly, when I look at my own evolution, I came from the right, the political right, the standard political right. I still regard myself essentially as being of that water, and I don't have any problems with admitting it. It's a bit of a weakness. I should have been aware of everything from the outset, but there you are, I wasn't. What I didn't have was a broad sort of basis of thinking, or you might say semi-racist thinking, such as the John Birch Society and George C. Wallace and this sort of thing. And you did go through all of that, but you also went towards neo-Nazism, and you became involved with aspects of the struggle, which of course are almost the kiss of death, certainly on this side of the water. As soon as anybody becomes associated with Nazism in any way, shape or form, they are dead politically. There's just no way forward, and everybody makes a great effort, of course, to find some way of expressing yourself that doesn't get you into that kind of dead end. But you seem to have sort of sailed straight in and straight through it, which I can't think of anybody else who's actually done that. I mean, when you were looking at all of these different things, you had faith, then you didn't particularly, you seemed to have become secular. Did it ever occur to you that you were sort of a gadfly, that there was nothing sort of definitive that you would ever find and cling to, or did you expect at some point to come across a platform and say, yep, this is it, this is the one that I've got to try to give to other people to evangelize and popularize and get to work? I mean, or are you still looking for that?
Well, I understand what you're saying, and I think we all should always never stop searching and thinking and reevaluating ourselves. I think that that's the only way we get anywhere. Daniel Webster was said to have, when he gave a speech, it'd be like cannonballs coming out of his mouth on one side, and they said, but if he changed his mind, the cannonballs came out of the other side of his mouth the next day. I have no problem in changing my positions, but they keep getting smaller, skewing, a rocket going to the moon as the main rocket that's got it going, that's the race issue. And then you've got the little rocket on the side, the small ones, just to sort of and keep it on course or change your course a little bit, So I have no problem changing my views, but when I do have views, they're radical views. I don't change views lightly. Like I played around with the right wing for so long, but now I'm so embarrassed by the right wing. I'm not, and I don't accept the term Nazi. I don't think we should ever use that term, because that's a Jewish created term as far as I'm concerned.
It's become that way.
We should always say, if we're going to talk about National Socialists, we talk about National Socialists. Is a person is a person a National Socialist, or isn't he? I can't be really National Socialist, because I see myself as a Pan-Aryanist, white pride worldwide. I don't delineate over national borders. I think that it's far too late in the system, which much of the right wing still are into petty nationalism. I think it's even worse in Europe. I grit my teeth when I see the fighting that goes on between white Europeans.
Well, there's always going to be a lot of heat in the issue of how you resolve a problem such as the one that we're facing. And, one doesn't expect necessarily to all jump in the same boat. It would be nice, but we're not going to do that. If you look at the French, they've got probably more intellectualism in their politics. I don't mean intellectualism per se, but intellectualism in their politics on the right than any other country in Europe. You've right there at the beginning, you've got the split between the Clock Club people and between the National Front. And the racists are associated, the old ones are associated with the National Front. So, you right from the start, you get a split, you can't avoid it, it's part of human nature. There is no unity in matters matters of politics, and that's probably okay. I mean, you can have a kind of Hegelian conversation and make some progress.
Well, my position is very simple. We're in race war, and we're either white racist or we're not white European racists. That's it. If somebody doesn't want to go along with that, they're get away from it. Anything to do with it.
Yeah, I think there's quite a lot of people who don't want to go along with that. I think that the it's not just because of the poisoning of the words. I think that there's more than that to it. And if you talk to people, in the French situation, you know, on the sort of clock club side, they've got very good reasons, or they present very sound arguments why that should be the case. And I don't think it's a bad thing at all. But in America, it does seem that the situation is much more clarified, as I was trying to say before. There are so many more ground level, perhaps because of your experience of slavery and all the rest, there's so much more ground level activist possibilities, or they used to be, with the Klan and so forth, that don't apply at all over this side of the water. And you seem to have taken full advantage of just about every one. You mentioned that we should be racists in a sort of fearless sense, and I've questioned that. Would you care to put a definition on what a racist is?
A racist is one who understands and believes in race and is willing and anxious to work for the best interest of his race.
Right.
Even if you're not white, you can work for the best interest of your race. So it's very simple. You see, what they're trying to do now is eliminate the idea of race at all. They're doing a lot of making a lot of headway on that, trying to convince young people that there is no such thing as race.
Yeah, I think that's actually over the worst of that now.
Right, and the Quakers did it. Back in the old days, they insulted them by calling them Quakers. And the Quakers instead changing their name, stuck right with Quaker, and now look at they became a big idol. So I say, when they call you a racist, you smile, you say thank you. I appreciate the compliment. Are you? In my travels around, anybody says, are you a racist? I say, of course I'm a racist. Anybody should be a racist and want to.
And CW, I need to intervene in just for a second. I think we can agree that on that definition of racism, but there might be a difference in the European situation that you're not, that it's seen here, and I think legitimately that the distinctions between the particular nations has got to be maintained to some extent. I'm sure GW feels that way about his English people, is very concerned with them. And interestingly, it's from TT himself that I got the metaphor of the compartmentalized ship. That is, the race is the ship, and then there's all these compartments of that would represent the different national groupings. And so that maybe there is a way to do both.
Well, there are two basic ways of looking at the race definition, to my mind. And it seems to me that racism as a negative form of self-preference is entirely natural. It's coded. It's something that is universal to mankind. And whilst it is negative in its application, nonetheless, it's something that we just have to learn to live with and express. And if it happens to us in this negative way, you know, if we're the ones on the butt end of it, well, okay, fair enough. You just got to take that on the chin. The other one is something that I think has been invented and applied to us. It's been invented principally by, from Jewish sources, particularly obviously from Magnus Hirschfeld. And it's a vehicle for other ethnic interests besides our own. It's as simple as that. It's what we all have to cope with every time we bump into somebody on the liberal left who immediately launches into, you know, as a reflex, really, immediately launches into a trade, and bang, that's it. And I don't think these two things should be confused in any way. But when people say, well, I am a racist, they might be saying, well, we are all racists, and so am I, and there's nothing wrong with that. That, I think, is what Tom is mostly saying there. And there are also people who say, well, I don't care if you call me a racist. I just don't care. I think it's overvalued. I don't think anybody is worried about that anymore. And you can say what you damn well like about me, to hell with you. And, you know, that's fine and brave, and maybe that's necessary too. But there is quite a large difference between the two, because the first one is a thinking person who is going forward with an idea about humanity, and the second one is just reacting and trying to find a way of escaping from pressure. So I think it's worthwhile, you know, asking Tom that question, and the answer I get back basically is that he ascribes really his politics to the former, and I think that's quite appropriate. If I'm wrong, Tom, please say so.
I see nothing negative about racism. And I see nothing wrong with hatred either. I hate my enemies and I love my friends.
Yeah,
I agree.
I'm a normal human being, and I'm going to act like a human being, and I can't be a hypocrite. I've always, when people ask me a question, I give them a straight answer. And if they expect me to say, oh, well, I'm a racist, but I'm this kind, or well, I'm that, you know, BS. I want to meet the enemies in the field of battle and kick their ass. But if they're nice and polite, I'll discuss it all day long with them. The same way with the secondhand Jew Christians. I'll talk to them. I talk to them. Sometimes they even come up to my house. But finally, I have to say, well, I got to get out of here. But if they give me any kind of stuff, you're going to hell and you're going to suffer and all that kind of stuff, I just say, get your ass out of here. I don't want to talk to them. Our biggest problem today, as far as I'm concerned, is not only the ruling class, the decadent ruling class, but Christianity, this Judaism warmed over.
Yeah.
It's patsies and patsies and sheep out of our people. I mean, I'm right in the middle of it around here. I got hundreds and hundreds of churches. I call them mind control centers, and they're putting out the most garbage, and everybody's equal every Sunday, and all week long on the radio you even hear it out here.
Yeah, but this is only the inevitable working out of the Jewish view of the Gentile. We're an undifferentiated mass, and you know, Christianity holds that as much as Judaism does, Pauline Christianity, and it's only just working out in the way it must. So, you know, I think Christianity is as much as it was adopted by or for the European mind, as much as we picked it up and we gave it form, we gave it music, we gave it faith, all of that is admissible, is good. But the content of the religion, in terms of its universalism, certainly, and in terms of putting its focus on to life after death instead of this world, Judaism is a this world faith. Strangely, you know, that all that is unhelpful in the extreme. So, yeah, I agree with that.
90% of it's nonsense, and Jesus never existed. There's plenty of evidence to that. And then when you say faith is believing something without evidence. The whole, as Ben Klassen would say, the whole ball of wax has to go. I mean, I tell Christians all, I don't want to be around these fundamentalist Christians, because I don't trust them. I think they would sooner put a knife in my back than even a Jew.
Well, Jews are honest about their faith, aren't they? And Christians are mistaken about their faith. That's the nature of it. And you can't can't deal with somebody who's fundamentally mistaken. They will always carry on. You know, faith has this. Faith is a human characteristic. It's a trait. I've held that it's genetically coded. And when you listen to people who speak from faith, even liberals, even racialists, we've had them associated with MR, that the tendency is for them to always put their belief, their faith object, in the front of what they're saying, and everything else then sort of, you know, turns towards that and justifies it, and it bigs it up, and that's the way that they work. Faith is so close to them; it's closer even than for an intellectual. It's closer even than his intellectual process, and you know, he will always react from that. Will always think from that. nothing you can do about that. But with Christianity, you know, it seems to me that there's been a long road through some quite difficult passages of adoption. You know, during that period, I think it may have had some value for us as a race. But now, I think when we've been through these two world wars and we're confronted with this demographic disaster now, it's political disaster and racial disaster, it has absolutely nothing to say but, you know, carry on. So its utility is minimal, to say the least.
I go farther than that. Without the elimination of the Abrahamic religions in toto, we don't have a chance. The human race does not have a chance, because that is the main weapon that the ruling class uses to keep us under control. And I'd flat out, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity have retarded our progress so horribly that we cannot escape our problems on Earth today without getting rid of it.
No, you may be right. I mean, there is an element in nationalism which says, well, you know, we've got to dispose of the Christian faith, we've got to go back to paganism or whatever. There's an element that says, well, capitalism is the problem, you know, and we have a danger with Mammon and federal banks and all this sort of thing. There's an element that says immigration is the problem, foreign races. There's an element that says it's Jews. There are so many different competing problems which for our attention. And you know, in the end, you have to say, well, Christ, I've got to do this, I've got to do that, I've got to fight this war against Christianity, I've got to do something else here against, and the whole damn thing becomes quite a large exercise. I've always felt, in a sense, that to be against everything is too much. We need to refine a little bit.
Well, we need to be against three things. We need to be for race.
Right.
We need to be against religion as the major religions, and we need to be against predatory capitalism. That's all it takes to straighten this thing out.
Maybe.
It's not, yeah. Predatory capitalism, I mean, on the monetary side, has to be destroyed, because it's a carnivorous, predatory Frankenstein system that's eating everything in its path.
Yeah, but I mean, that's relatively easy to deal with, really, because the aspect of what you call predatory capitalism, which is most particular to this problem, is the connection between politics and capitalism, so that you've got something specific to go at. You're talking about the control of the political parties, the control of political discourse, and that gives you a definitive target. So that's fairly easy to deal with. When you come to Christianity, you've got a hell of a problem, because, you know, something I've said to Daniel in the past, you can't just create a religion. They don't come out of nowhere in that way. You can't sit down and invent one day and then start. They are from somewhere else. Exactly where that is, we could debate a lot, but they sure as hell don't come from a political activism, and it's very difficult to see how you could actually replace a religion. That's something big.
It's very simple. Ben did it with Nature's Eternal Religion and the Church of the Creator. He gave us a racial religion that's almost perfect. All we had to do was run with it, but the entire right-wing conservative racial community attacked Ben Klassen and the Church of the Creator like mad, what's the problem? You got the white man's Bible, eternal religion. That's all.
The problem with religion is that it is extremely, I mean, all great religions are extremely complex structures. They're not simply something that you can use activists to overcome. They're very complex. They offer a great deal of mystical and not intellectual exactly, but certainly highly intellectual forms of expression and pursuit. And they, you know, that sort of thing, that didn't come with some sort of silly belief system knocked up in somebody's garage one day. You know, here you are, guys, let's do this. It's a very, very major enterprise to see how you can attack Christianity. I think that Christianity can slowly die over a period of generations, and I think there's an argument to say that that is happening. But I don't think it's something that you can actually even promote. I think it's an organic process, and it may well fall by the wayside. If you look at the probable because we don't know, but if you look at the probable replacement of paganism with Christianity, that took centuries to actually accomplish. And, you know, it took 300 years for just in Rome for something actually specific to be accomplished to the point of Constantine, you know, making his commitments. So, you know, that's a major thing to attack. If you're going to do that, you've got to be somebody who thinks in a really long time scale. And my own feeling is that, you know, given the fact that we've got a few decades till we're minoritized, both in America and in Europe, the main countries of Europe, we need to be looking at a thinned down and functioning way that we can actually address the really live issues and not waste our effort on things that are going to be very, very difficult even to understand how one can begin to approach changing.
We have to set our sights high. The trouble with the right-wing racial people is they've always set their sights low, and I've said to them over and over and over again, why would you go out on the streets and shoot a black guy, or why would you go out and shoot to some Jew that doesn't even know what's going on? He's just a working-class Jew. And look at this latest thing with Glenn Miller going down there and getting drunk and shooting Jews. I mean, this is the right wing, and that's why I don't want anything to do with the right wing, whether it's the BNP and that stuff in England, or whether it's the French phony party they got down there with, I forget his name, but anyhow, I'm through with that. I'm radical. I've picked up a lot of left-wing issues, and I'm revolutionary in nature, and I don't want to waste the rest of time.
Well, I mean, you see, I would call the BNP actually quite a left-wing party, and Front National as well, I would call a left-wing party. I'm interested to know your definition of left-wing, because it's clearly something that is very close to the meat of the issue. It comes from your own experience of men and experience of life, and that would be something that would interest me a great deal. How do you differentiate what you understand as being you know, the interests of the working man from the kind of thing which you see in the European nationalist parties? How would you differentiate?
In the early part of the last century, we had populism, we had the agrarian movement, we even had the socialists and the Klan working together. Things were really going in the right direction. As far as European, I'm more of a Strasserist than anything right. If you want to, I don't like to put labels on myself, but if Hitler would have, if the Strasserist would have controlled the situation and had
that's social nationalism, though. Now you're talking about Golden Dawn, really?
Well, Golden is just trying to pretend they're like National Socialist Germany. Why any Greek would want to be mimicking Nazis? Unbelievable.
No, they're not mimicking Nazis. No, that's not true. I would regard them as being quite stressless. I think that they, you know, they're doing some food distributions. It's not a gimmick. That may stop now because they've hit some difficulties with taxes. But they've got very close to the people. I think that they're building, they've done this very, very difficult thing, which is to actually build a political party that lives amongst the people. You get the leaders of Greece, Dinderis, and all the rest of them, Samaras, and they can't go amongst the people.
Well, but along with that, at the same time you're with the people, you've got to attack the ruling class. The people that are really selling streets at the top, they have to attack those people. One way or another, scare them to death, make them leave the country, and so forth. Like, just doing some of these little social things, a lot of people see that as sort of a cynical thing, trying to get them to vote for them and like that. But no, the flag and the way they march around and stuff, it's just just recreating old National Socialist stuff from World War II. I say the working man should look like a working man. You don't need a uniform. You don't need a flat.
No.
Like Rockwell said, my skin.
Let it all come out of what he is. That's my attitude too. In fact, I'm trying to actually spread that idea as much as I can. I don't, just to explain, I don't come out of the left, come out of the political right, but my family is a working class background. My mum was one of 12, and we do have that background. So I understand what it is, and I respect it greatly, and I think that its shining characteristic is that it is sincere. It's itself. It's true. When you look into the eyes of pretty well any working class guy when he's talking, you can see that he's not presenting something with a certain tension and distance inside himself. He's not self-regarding. He's not looking at whether he's okay. He's simply living for real. And I do respect that. And I think that that's a way commend living generally. Getting off the subject a little bit, sorry about that.
This way, the nationalism of the right wing in Europe is not going to create a common front. In other words, you got a EU over there. Now you need a racial struggle across Europe instead of the EU. And if you keep World War II all over again, and this silliness of marching around in the streets and so forth, without big gatherings like in Egypt where they pull it off, got to get out in the streets as a working class person with your working class clothes and storm the Capitol.
They get a million on these gatherings in the middle of Cairo and what have you, a million people, which is a little bit beyond what we're going to see in London anytime soon. I can tell you that for sure.
Okay, England's through. I mean,
if
they don't come attack on these Muslims and drive them out physically by the hair, if they don't have an order type movement over there and come out and attack the city of London and burn that son of a bitch down, if they don't rise up and do the number, they're through. They don't have
No. It'll take time. It'll take time, and it'll happen. It'll happen politically, within the next 10 or 15 years. And if it hasn't happened in that time, then the kind of thing you're talking about will probably come to pass.
I'm sorry, Daniel. You're dreaming. You're dreaming. They're going to be bred out long before that. It's a very tiny island, and I mean, it's too bad they wasted all their time in the IRA and everything fighting each other over there. They should have been keeping these non-whites out because they're breeding.
But who's they?
The Muslims, the non-whites.
No. And you said they should have been. This is the thing they in that sentence have no power. The they is the people, and the people have
been populate has power.
It does not have power. If you look at the EU, you just mentioned the EU. The EU fundamentally is a method for a new ruling class of an international nature to arise. It need never face any kind of political judgment for its actions. It is insulated, it is secure, it is paid for by the people's taxes. This is what the EU is, and the decisions that they take aren't decisions which are taken for the people. They're decisions that are taken for the EU process. So you never actually get any popular input to the politics of the European Union. Which are 80%, they say, it's been said, it might be a bit less, but they do say it's about 80% of the legal sort of changes that are made throughout Europe. They all come from the EU, not from the national parliaments. When you say they, the people are really being marginalised, the true people of the land, and they don't have that possibility to actually act. And all that you're seeing from us at the moment in Front National, MPD, UKIP, BNP, the Swiss People's Party, all that you're seeing really is an attempt by the masses, or people acting on behalf of the masses, really, to try to correct that situation and produce some actual political movement in their interests.
Do you have earphones on?
Say it again?
Keep trying to get in here, and you keep talking.
Sorry, Daniel, because I can't hear you. From here.
I'm here. TT, it's your turn to talk. Go ahead.
Okay. All this Nationalist Party stuff is nonsense. It's not revolutionary. It's not going in.
No. And it's more evolutionary than revolutionary, that's for sure.
In England, not only don't they run all these wogs out, but they allow the City of London and the Queen and all that nonsense to rape the country, inflation up the kazoo. The bankers in England are raping the people. And now it's going to cost you £60,000 to get a college education in England. When are the people going to rise up?
Well, they're not going to rise up on the streets. That's not going to happen at this stage. But it could happen if all political avenues are blocked. So the process which you see in Europe, which you don't see in America, is kind of like, well, we're going to make this political effort, and then we'll think about what we do when it fails. That's really the kind of thing that what you're saying. If Golden Dawn doesn't succeed in overturning the situation in Greece, Greece will explode.
Well, they're not.
That's the first one.
They're not going to, because they started off wrong, trying to mimic National Socialists of World War II.
They've got it right now.
Instead of making deals with the left, even with the communists, maybe. That's
not
a shock.
Well, that couldn't be done. That couldn't be done.
I'll talk and work with any white man that wants to talk and work. I don't care what he calls himself. But I'm telling you, you can't do it from the right anymore, because the right gets controlled. No matter what, they're going to control those guys. And if they get in their way, the ruling class is going to step on them like a bug.
Yeah. Well, that's what's been happening in Greece in a major way. I do believe that Golden Dawn is currently leading the polls. Certainly, they believe they're leading the polls.
Maybe one second. Maybe in terms of instead of right and left here, we need to talk in terms of our above ground and our below ground, because I think we both want the same thing. But how is it that we coordinate the two?
Right.
And what sort of above ground activities might Metzger approve of? I mean, certainly not everybody could be an underground lone wolf. I can't keep it inside personally. I'd go nuts.
Most of our lone wolves are out in the open. I mean, I'm out in the open. Hell, everybody in the whole region around here knows me. I mean, they talk to me. I talk to them about politics every day. You don't have to be secret underground to be a lone wolf. There's all kinds of lone wolves. But I say whoever's attacking the ruling system in Greece should be an ally. And anyone who doesn't is not an ally.
Right.
And sort things out later. Right away you get this sort of left thing, right thing, and then they're all fighting among themselves. I see it here all the time, and I used to go through all this stuff where poor white leftists and poor white rightists are out rolling around in a gutter when they both have almost the same enemy. Instead of coming together, that's why Germany has a law that says it's against the law for the right and the left to together to work for a common purpose. There's a secret right there. The ruling class can't stand to see right move a little left and left move a little right. But I don't know. These people, just these leaders in the right wing and so forth, and the left, they just don't get it. I mean, we've got this rancher out here in Nevada who's got a problem with the government, and I agree, anything can be a problem with the government. But all the right-wing radio and all the left-wing radio, the left-wing radio comes down, oh, we support the government. Any other time, they hate the government. The right-wing comes down, oh, we hate the government. I mean, you know, as long as they can keep us totally divided like they do the working class and keep our mind off the predatory capitalists and these people at the top, we need to go for the throat at the top.
Could you define some of those top institutions that need addressing? I mean, I such as the Council of Foreign Relations, AIPAC, Federal Reserve. What else?
Those are just minor players. I'm talking about Wall Street.
Okay.
I march.
Can you define it further than Wall Street? That's pretty vague.
Well, the banks on Wall Street.
Goldman Sachs and.
Goldman Sachs, especially people like that. I mean, I went in the City of London. I mean, you know, the left and right have to just for a few days forget all the differences and attack these institutions because they're at the heart of your problem.
But you know, the movement which on the left, which was doing this, was the Occupy movement.
And I joined in with it. I carried a sign. I had a sign right here in this little town I live in, Occupy Warsaw, Indiana, and I marched up and down the street, and the right-wing Republicans were screaming at me out of their car windows and their truck windows, cussing me and calling me every name in the book. It was the right-wing conservatives that were attacking me.
Yeah. I mean, the Occupy movement is interesting. I just get the feeling that they've only got about a third of the or less than a third of the story. And the other parts of the story, they've not only not got, but they are, you know, fanatically opposed to getting.
Well, the problem you've got here is everybody says, well, I'm not going to go down there and demonstrate against the government because this guy's down there. I'm not going to go down there and demonstrate against the banks because that guy's down there. And I'm not going to go down there for this. You know, you got to forget that a while, and everybody do it for a while and see. You may find this more fun.
Well, there are people who've done that. I mean, there are groups, not just in America, in Australia too, what do you call them, national anarchists, who've been involved in marches where they've quietly cottoned onto the back of, you know, the usual bunch of left-wingers slouching towards Gomorrah with their banners. And then you get this bunch of people dressed in black, you know, sort of going along until they get identified when all hell breaks loose and stones are thrown at them, of course. But, I mean, there's been instances like that, you know, it's okay, but I just don't see the left actually agreeing to allow it, because I don't think they've got enough of the story.
Well, left is not that powerful. I mean, they have their leaders. I've beaten them bloody in the streets many times. I mean, everybody, you know, they have a few key speakers, but I recruit left-wingers all the time into Lone Wolf. You give me a young, college-educated white man or woman, let me sit down with them. And first of all, I point out every point that I agree with them on. And when I get all done with the points I agree with you on, then say, now I know we disagree on race, but just think it over, keep it in the back of your mind. I don't try to beat them over the head. I don't try to grab them by the lapels. And as they look around them and they see that it's costing $30,000 to get an education, they go in debt and it's going to cost them $70,000. And if they see all this happening, they see the non-whites just absolutely eating up their neighborhoods and the crime rising everywhere, they'll learn. See, if you don't listen, you'll have to feel. The white race has to get knocked to its knees even more before we can get this thing really going. We can't do it now. The white race hasn't suffered enough yet.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm not entirely convinced that we need to suffer too much more. I think we're pretty close. There's an awful lot of anger now.
You're not near the bottom. We've got a long way to the bottom.
Maybe. I mean, if you look at Greece, you know, the progress of Golden Dawn in Greece, the Greeks are pretty much close to where the Germans were. They're not quite there. There's probably another year or two of suffering, but you know, they're heading in that direction. There's absolutely nothing in Greece. I mean, they've had it all. And there's no way that they're ever going to be free. And there is no other alternative politically but Golden Dawn, which is, you know, offering them a possible route out of it. So it'll be interesting to see, to test this thesis, you know, of how much suffering it takes before people actually unify.
Well, the key,
happening right before our eyes.
Speaking of suffering, Jimmy Marr wants to call in and talk a little bit about Christianity with you guys.
Yeah? Key to the racial struggle.
Jimmy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can anyone hear me?
Great.
Good morning, Tom. Hi, GW.
Morning.
Hello, Jimmy.
Thanks for inviting me on to the call. Yeah, well, I think we're running down on time. Christianity is interesting to me, and I agree with Tom on it. I did want to say that I've had good luck recently. Recently, over the last couple of years, but recently, even this week, I've been up to Western Washington University last weekend to do a small protest. I'm using this language, diversity is a code word for white genocide, rather than really being ideological about it. I'm much more phenomenological. And the university is actually, I see now, they're organizing a counter-protest. It's a march that'll be on Monday, and it's called Diversity Is, and the students are encouraged to, fill in the blank, Diversity Is. And anyway, I'll be up there again, I think, on Monday, because I want to participate in the march. And it's a very left-leaning university, and the idea really is, for me, in a case like this, is to flank the left on the left, you know, by just assuming and acting like they value my contribution, my individualism, about my own definition of diversity, and that, you know, certainly they're a tolerant group, and they're going to allow me to participate with diversity as a code word for white genocide.
Okay, that's good. But I'm not for parades and stuff like that. I think we show our weakness more than our strength. And the other side are very, very few of them will ever have you share the stage. I cajole them all the time. I say, you're going to talk about race? Invite me. I used to lecture at the universities all the time in California, but the Jews got me blackballed out of the colleges. But I email these people all the time. You're going to talk about race? You got a racial symposium? Invite me. Talk to a real racist. You know what I mean? But they won't do it. They're cowards.
Well, I'm looking forward to Monday to see. And of course, I won't be interjecting the topic as race, but as white genocide. And I'm sure that they won't exactly welcome me. Now, as to your other topic about, yes, I've been involved recently in this thing called White Man March, and I think for us as white racialists to categorize ourselves as a march, as you say, it shows our weakness, because we really don't have the numbers. But to get into a leftist march, maybe a different, you know, in other words, more or less hijacking, or at least riding along with this left-leaning march, for tolerance, well, giving them a chance to show how tolerant they are of my diversity.
We had a chance with Occupy Wall Street. There were a lot of racists that went down there and stood around and dialogued with so-called leftists and so forth like that. But the general right wing, all you have to do is say, they're a bunch of communists and they're homosexuals, and they won't go near it. I mean, you know, so we had a great chance under Occupy. But only a few of our people wanted to go down there because they said, oh, there's people there I don't like, you know.
Yes, you're right about that.
It's a real problem. But I still say, number one, you have to have a racial, an economic collapse or a type of collapse. A really bad one, which I'm sure we got several coming. And then it reverts to race. It won't start as race. It'll start as economics, and then it'll revert to tribalism and race.
Can I ask a slightly, this one Jimmy might want to reply to as well, but slightly more upmarket question. One of the interesting things is somebody of a European... Hello, what's that? Is that off? One of the interesting things is somebody who's been intellectualized in the European tradition is that liberalism as a system, as a general system of thought, is something that we can actually look at and think about. It's something that we can put on the table and put a scalpel across and open it up and look at it and think about what it all means. My experience of Americans, particularly in white nationalist form, is that they're so close to liberalism and they're so much the product of it, of this sort of Enlightenment thinking, that they don't really understand where it begins and where it ends. They just tend to be subsumed in it. Tom, when you say you're talking about the right and left and all this sort of thing, you've got a very sound understanding of what they are. Do you have an understanding that the American model of man, you know, this rugged individualism and all the rest of it, is itself not a true model of man? And that if you were mentioning moving away from Christianity, but if you were to actually refound man, which is something which the National Socialists attempted to do in Germany, you've got to do it in a non-liberal way. First of all, do you agree with that? And secondly, what do you think that would mean for Americans who are so very, very enculturated in liberalism?
Well, the trouble of both the left and the right is they believe in the masses, that they could somehow get control and point them in a certain direction. Never happened, never will happen. It's 1% that runs this world, and it's 1% that can take them down. And so I don't concentrate on masses of people. I concentrate on radicals and fanatics and revolutionaries. But then I also caution them that it's not time yet. The empire of this Washington, D.C. is beginning to show signs of crumble, but it's not crumbled enough for us to get involved. So we're just waiting for this thing. And it may be my sons and my daughters. I mean, but the point is, it's going to fall, and that's the time when we move.
Can I just say something that I have, my definition of liberalism seems to work consistently well. I mean, I see class and race as the same thing. I put them together as one. And when people transgress that or promote the transgression of that and going outside of that of accountability to the class, the race, then they're a liberal and they're promoting liberalism. It's fairly simple, and I think that's one way to look at it. It works for me.
I respect an honest liberal, but they're all dead. I haven't found an honest liberal in the
decade. Well, not in, you don't respect in the way that I mean it, T.T., because I'm talking about people who are betraying the race. And that's what liberalism is to me.
Liberalism is more than that. I mean, to me, it's a system, a total system of thought.
Oh, it is more.
It's the system of the Western world.
It's
the totality. It's the water that we've all been... dropped into to swim around in.
That's a very good point, but it's become the water because it's institutionalized in the Constitution.
Why don't we get rid of these terms like liberal and conservative and just say race traitor or not a race traitor?
Well, that's how I'm defining it, though.
It's good, because we waste all kinds of time arguing over these words.
No, then it's not wasted, Tom, because ultimately, if you were to change everything the way you want it, but you didn't change the underlying presumptions and prescriptions that formulate the way people act and live over the long term, if you didn't change that too, you will then get a return to the default over a period of time. That these ideas, if they're in place, these ideas about what man is, will always work their way through into the life of man in exactly the same way that I was saying earlier about Christianity and the notion of a differentiated Gentile is working its way out in race blindness and so on, denial of race. These things will always come through. So you end up saying to yourself, okay, I want to make a change, and you've got to make it at every level. you've got to make it all the way down if you want to get rid of all of the influences that have led us to where we already are. Where's Jimmy? Is he still there?
A minute. I'm here. Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, Jimmy, I mean, you know, you've been very close in your contacts in universities to sort of classical liberal thinking and all the rest of it. I just wonder whether you would like to offer something on that.
You know, it's a little bit too theoretical for me, GW. What I would like to add, would be to Tom. I share his sense that it takes collapse or war, but you know, I think that we can make trouble and keep the pressure on the 1% and keep them moving forward. For instance, with their globalist project, whatever the heck they're doing, for instance, in Ukraine. You know, show enough domestic unrest with their plan that they feel pushed to move forward until they overextend themselves. That's the way I tend to look at things every time that I'm making trouble on the street, as small as it is. I just sort of see myself as a rodeo clown, just stirring things up, just so it keeps it in the public awareness that we're not done yet.
Yeah. Agitate. That's what we have to keep doing. You're right. We have to agitate and take the common man as far as you can go with him when you talk to him. I like to sit around with common working people and some, you know, more well-off people and, you know, like that. I sit around, just shoot the breeze with them, and I go just as far as they can go. Most of them can only go so far, and you're wasting your time if you try to push them any harder. But you keep planting seeds in their brain, you know, logical seeds that at some point, you know, I have people email me that said, I was listening to you 30, 40 years ago, and I said you were crazy, a nut, a criminal, and everything, but now I agree with you completely. I get that all the time. And, you know, in the little kids used to get my newspaper and so forth. Now they're in the working force, and they're in the professions, they're in the military, they're in the police. But we tell them to keep your mouth shut and just be ready for whatever happens.
But this is one of the most interesting things about political history in the West. If I look at our own situation in the UK, after the war, nationalists were completely and totally out. For obvious reasons, there was this huge hangover of propaganda, anti-Nazi propaganda, and it went on for a long time. And to be a nationalist in any shape or form at that time, notwithstanding the fact that quite a lot of them were bedroom Nazis and, you know, put the uniform on and took photographs of themselves doing their salutes and stuff, that was true. But you know, to be a nationalist at that time was a kiss of death in every way. But the fact is, they were right. They were right. What they said was correct. And it's only now that we're beginning to understand, you know, metapolitically, that they had a correct reading of modernity and of liberalism and of the elites. They understood much, much more, even though there were these guys wearing uniforms and marching and getting into terrible fights with the anti-racist left and all the rest of it, getting bloodied and losing. In fact, they were beaten off the streets. For all that, still they were right. And now we're finding that there's a gradual seepage into the discourse of the sorts of things they're talking about, and it's becoming increasingly respectable for journalists to speak of these things, of course in their own terms, but gradually the discourse is beginning to open up and shift. So to have been a nationalist was virtually criminal 60 years ago and is almost respectable now, and it's another 20 years time, my guess is, that the country will be nationalist. That's my feeling. I think that is the way that things are shifting. And we're going to see some improvement, but, you know, I hope to live to see it. I may not.
This is Insurgent Radio Network. This is Terrible Tommy. And I'm getting the cart before the horse here. We're putting the beginning at the end. I could have done it differently, but I didn't. Okay. It is, what do we got here? Move the speaker out of the way. This is April the 28th, 2014. And it's Moon's Day today. Moon's Day. Well, we had a little problem with that so-called interview with majority rights. Technically, I think that, unfortunately, I did not do my recorder properly. I've got this Skype recorder. But if you started out to record something, when you go on, it's perfect. But if you stop and then go to start it up again, it says you're recording, but you're not recording. So it took us about an hour to get ready to do that show. And I had that all on tape. I had that all on copied. And then I killed it and went to start up again, and I didn't get any of that. And if I had, we'd have had a much cleaner show, I'm sure. However, I also could have turned on my other recorder, my regular onboard desktop MP3 recorder, and done a lot better. But there was a lot of, well, I enjoyed these individuals, talking to them and so forth, but the moderator was more into, unfortunately, giving speeches instead of speaking in sentences and paragraphs and questions and then pause and let me say something. So I had a problem. I was trying to... sometimes people don't put on earphones or something. I don't know what it is, and I'm talking and they don't hear me. But remember that whenever you're trying to do a recording of an interview, at least have your questions fairly concise and then pause and let your guest finish his answers to the question. And then back, I had that problem with Wolf Wall Street. He'd get on a tear and he'd just keep going and going and going. I couldn't get a word in edgewise. This gentleman that was doing most of the talking there has a he has a very optimistic view of Golden Dawn, which every time a right-wing type group in any country rises up and gets a little attention in press and then gets maybe a few votes in their parliament or something like that, they go crazy. We're winning now. We're winning now. Well, that doesn't mean anything, because the ruling class have a million ways to crush you like a bug. Now, if you'll notice that if a minor party gets up about 20%, that's when all the Jew sirens go off, the bells go off, and all your enemies come after you. 20% seems to be the number. If you're down around 5-10%, something like that, maybe even less, they don't pay any attention. Like, you know, when I was running for Congress out there, they got pretty excited, but I never reached 20% of the vote. Anyhow, let's see now. Now, one good thing, that was on Friday that we did that show. And on Saturday, I went to a tolerance gathering, a diversity gathering, here in the town I live in, which turned out to be 99% white. Yeah, I think only in the last 5 minutes at the end was there one black guy came. We had one gal who was fairly brown from Brazil, like that. And I didn't see any Asians there, but, you know, primarily white people. But I didn't know what to think, so I said, well, I'll just go down there and see what's going on. Now, I've done this in the past in California and had some interesting results. Because there's one thing to talk about Tom Metzger or anybody like me at a distance, you know, a sort of abstract way, call them all kinds of names, and, oh, I hate that guy, and he don't have any ideas at all. But when you go among these people and smile and talk to them, and talk to them at their level, they treated me fine. Yeah, I had my T-shirt on, and I'll put that on when I send this stuff out tomorrow, which said it's not illegal to be white yet. And it was boldly out there where everybody could see. And then they decided to have a parade downtown, and so there's about maybe 40 people. They had their placards, and unfortunately I didn't have my placard, but I had my T-shirt, which is really bold, you can see it. So I joined in, and all along the way I stood by the march by the curb and showed my T-shirt to traffic, and I was getting I think more thumbs up and cheers than they were. Pretty hard to tell, but my point is that just like Occupy New York and all that stuff, there's no reason you can't go into these deals. And at the end of this parade, I talked to this young gal that was somewhat the leader, one of the leaders, and we had a very nice discussion and so forth. And I said at one point, I said, you know, we agree on a whole lot of issues. She said, yeah. I said, well, we agree on, I'm anti-war. I'm anti-predatory capitalism. I'm very pro-environment. I'm very anti-the big banks, all that kind of... I got a whole list of things, and you'd agree with that, wouldn't you? She said, yes. So I said, we disagree a little on this race thing, but remember, you're calling yourself diversity. You're a diversity movement? Well, if you look in the Webster's Dictionary, diversity means separate. And that's what I am. I'm a racial separatist. And her eyes got sort of big. And she says, is that true? I said, yes. Diversity means separate. So there's nothing wrong with people from separate races getting together to talk. It's just we don't agree with miscegenation and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so she said, that's something I'll think about that. And then she said she wanted her picture with me and her husband. She put her arm around me, and I put her arm around her, and they took my picture. Now, the local newspaper, since it's run by Republican conservatives, capitalistas, will probably not put anything about this parade or maybe just a little paragraph in the paper today. Probably no pictures. And if they don't publicize it, I'll write a letter to the paper and I say, what kind of news gathering outfit are you? These people put their time in, they went out there boldly into the streets to say what they believed, and you're not even giving them any coverage at all. And you see, we got a college out here, and I'm going to get into that college, and I'm going to talk to people. This is a working class guy, and I think you see where I'm going with this. In fact, one guy, this Mars fellow that called in on the show, is doing that up there in Seattle. But you don't go with uniforms on. You don't go with a bunch of symbols on. You just go as yourself and talk to people. And it works. It works. Oh, it doesn't work immediately, of course, but you plant the seed. I mean, if you were a car salesman and trying to sell a car, wouldn't you approach the buyer with all the things that he might agree with? Well, do you like those wheels and tires? Yeah, they're nice, yeah. Well, do you like the overall look of the car? Well, yeah, that's nice, too. Well, look at the interior. Isn't that nice, too? And that's the way you sell a car. The secret then is closing as fast as possible. So I closed the discussion with, hey, Webster's Dictionary says diversity means separation. And that was like a psychological little bombshell I dropped in there, which sunk in. So anyhow, I'll have some recordings from that probably tomorrow. I'm not sure how they came out. I didn't want to take a camera and take pictures because I didn't want them to think I was IDing these people, you know, going to do something to them or something, and like that. But I did have a tape recorder there, and I did tape a little of it. And some of the speeches, actually, they didn't seem to realize it, agreed with us. They just didn't realize it. That's unbelievable. So I think instead of going down the street in your Hollywood Nazi stuff and your Klan robes and all the other paraphernalia, I think you just sort of should be working class people. Your skin is your uniform. You represent yourself as just a person in the community. And I think you can start mentally recruiting a lot of people. Well, that's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow, 14:05.
Cheer up, Brian. You know what they say? Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble. Give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. Hey! Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten. And that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps. Just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life.
Come on.
Always look on the right side of life. For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin.
Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath. Life's a piece of shit. When you look at it, life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show, keep on laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life.
It's available in the foyer.
Some
of us live as well, right? What do you think pays for this rubbish? I never made that money back, you know? I told him. I said to him, Bernie, I'll never make that money back.